From the newsroom of PCJ Radio International, this is Focus Asia Pacific. I'm Keith Perron. The governor of Guam, Eddie Cavo, says the cannibalization of his territory's workforce has forced him to withdraw support for the military buildup. The number of U.S. military personnel in Guam has increased from 6,000 to 11,000 as troops are relocated from Japan. But Mr. Cavo told Ben Robinson Drawbridge the buildup has coincided with the federal government's decision to reduce the number of foreign workers on the island.
I want to preface this by stating that I have been the biggest, if not one of the biggest, advocates for the military buildup here in Guam, particularly the realignment of a portion of Marine forces from Okinawa to Guam. I believe in the short term, it's good for Guam's economy. It will build jobs in the long term. Also, we're in American territory. We understand what that means in terms of the security of Guam, of the United States, the security of American interests and their allies' interest in the region, and for stability in the region. With that belief, I signed a programmatic agreement moving forward the buildup with the Defense Department within 3 months of being sworn in office as governor. But the programmatic agreement that I signed, it entailed a one Guam approach where, and in a nutshell, without going into the details, what's good inside the fence is good outside the fence. And with this increased military presence in Guam and the construction activity leading up to it, that would not have any negative impact on our island, our people, and our economy. It appears that I've gone 180 degrees, at least from the standpoint of some folks, but in reality, it is not me that broke the agreement. It was the federal government that breached our programmatic agreement and the spirit of the One Guam approach. There had been no new law and no new rule change. We have had a certain number of temporary H-2B workers, visa workers in Guam, since post-World War II. And it's helped to grow our economy. We have our normal U.S. citizen workforce, which makes up the majority of our construction workers, but there is also a large percentage that are H-2 workers. And in January 2016, a decision was made, and we're still trying to find out, to reverse that policy, where we at once had close to 100% approval for new or renewals on H-2B visas, went to a near 100% denial of new visas or renewals. Where we once had, a year ago, 1,300-plus H-2 workers, we are, as of this week, 170. Now, it appears that a number of the construction companies within the base, that obviously these are multi-million dollar contracts, they are paying top dollar and they are cannibalizing many workers that are left in Guam, taking them from their companies, and now they are working within the gate. There has been no disruption in military construction. At the same time, outside the gate, anyone who's trying to build a house, anyone who's trying to do some major repair work, comes even to the point of repairing your air conditioning system. These projects, you're either not going to find someone to do them, or if you do get them, the price has gone up dramatically. For a house, you're looking at a near doubling for a low or middle income type of house. It also means extended timetables. You can't have any guarantees that a project will be finished within certain dates because of the uncertainty of the labor force. Even now, with only the beginning phases of the military construction, you're seeing a severe impact on our local economy and the construction activity as a result of a unilateral act by the federal government in reducing our workforce. And to this point, it has had no impacts inside the gate, and it is having severe impacts outside the gate, which I believe is a breach of the programmatic agreement. And with that, I have to withdraw my backing of this buildup. I would like to see a cessation of any additional projects until this issue can be resolved.
So it does seem, however, rather an extreme step. Even Guam's own Chamber of Commerce is questioning whether you have exhausted all diplomatic solutions here.
Right now, you're seeing the tail end of a long process. For over a year, I've been not only making personal visits thousands of miles to Washington, D.C., not only discussions with elected officials and appointed officials, and also top officials with the Defense Department, but also in correspondences from the president down. I've been using every means possible to tell them what direction the island was going on and the crisis that this island's economy was going on. And it has been in a near weekly basis that I've been making these communications. So this was telegraphed. Everybody saw this train coming. I have exhausted all means through normal channels to the point where I waited for us to go from 1,300 workers to 170 workers, where I waited until we are now having a doubling of prices in homes. So the question I ask for everybody else, how far do you want us to go?
The Vanuatu government is meeting with stakeholders to discuss recovery plans following Cyclone Cook. The Category 2 cyclone swept through this past weekend, causing widespread flooding and damage to crops. Some people in low-lying areas and next to rivers had to be evacuated. Sarah Vio Telitu has more.
Vanuatu's National Disaster Management Office says it is getting a clearer picture of the extent of damage caused by Cyclone Cook when it hit the country on Sunday. There has been some damage to crops, parts of Efate were flooded, and a number of people were forced to seek emergency shelter. The department's planning and research officer, Peter Kurisa, says Cyclone Cook caused moderate damage and assessments are still in the preliminary stage.
So far, our team in Botola is trying to work with the provincial authority just to do some assessment. Our focus now is more on assessment to assess several sectors, particularly agriculture, water and sanitation, infrastructure and education.
He says there's some wind and flood damage to root crops, but farmers should recover quickly.
The impact is more high on crops such as fruit trees and papaya or banana, so and cassava, of course, and that is the staple food for most people here in Vanuatu, particularly people living in rural areas.
World Vision says luckily the impact of Cyclone Cook is less than the damage caused by Cyclone Pam 2 years ago, which was a Category 5. The organisation's acting program director, Cesar Gallardón, says mainly crops situated in low-lying areas on Efate were the worst affected, but the impact is nowhere near as bad or as costly compared to the devastation caused by Cyclone Pam.
There are some areas here in Efate, but only those that are actually within the seashore or near some of the rivers. Those are the ones that's really affected because there was heavy rain. So, of course, the ordinary people doing those having their small gardens, those are really the ones that's really affected.
He says Ngāi Vanuatu are resilient and used to having cyclones, but 200 people had to be evacuated during Cyclone Cook, but most had returned to their homes by Tuesday. Mr. Gaidon says the good thing is the market crops are unlikely to be affected this time.
Oh, not really, ma'am, not really in the source in the market, because actually the market here is coming from some of the provinces also.
Vanuatu Chamber of Commerce's Senior Agribusiness Project Officer, Francois Kavirere, works closely with many Vanuatu farmers to develop local farming practices. He says he always emphasises the importance of cyclone-resistant crops.
When the farm devastated by the cyclone, we have to restart again, but that's what we try to educate them to the resistant crop, the cyclone-resistant crop, that we have to educate them that those crops are good. When cyclone hit, they cannot damage this crop very much, so that be part of the food security.
The storm intensified to Category 3 when it later passed over New Caledonia, but reports from there indicate damage and disruption was minimal. The remnants of the cyclone are now moving towards New Zealand, where it is expected to bring substantial rain. This is Saravui Telatu.
Last week on the program, we were talking about propaganda and North Korea. Mark Fahey is the author of a new ebook called Behind the Curtain. Pyongyang. It's actually a guide to propaganda in North Korea. All kinds of propaganda, film, television, newsprint, and everything. Now, last week on the program, we were discussing why he decided to focus on Pyongyang, because in the past, he's focused on China. We now continue with part two of our conversation. I mean, there really is a lot of content out there about North Korea, documentaries on film. The BBC has done them and time and time again, and books. Let's talk about yours. What sets yours apart from the others?
Well, and first off, I've kind of had to explain this a lot recently because it's described as an e-book, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which camp you fall into, it's only available on Apple devices in that it works on the iPad, works on iPhone, works on Apple Mac. And so a lot of people say to me, how come it only works on these devices? Can you do a PDF of it and so on? So the first thing is to explain it is, even though it's called an e-book, it actually is kind of a hybrid between an application and a book. Mm-hmm. So if you think of it in the sense of a book, it's very multimedia rich. There's every single thing you push, shove, photos expand, there's audio and video all the way through it. And so my intention, it was never going to be exactly in the format it is now when I first conceived it. I originally conceived that I would do this and produce a probably like an interactive website, and another idea was putting it on a series of DVD ROMs or a Blu-ray ROM and so on. And then when I was kind of conceiving this project, was the iPad was released. So in the very early days of conceiving the project, the iPad was released. And as soon as I had an iPad in my hand, I thought, this is the kind of device which it's really for. So what makes it different is that there's plenty to read. It's been formatted in a kind of like a I've tried to make it an easy read, and it's more of a magazine format than a book. It's not something that you necessarily would read in a serial way, right from the first page to the last page. If you want to do that, it will work that way. But it's also something where you can pick up, read for 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 15 minutes if you want, watch video clips, listen to sounds, and so you can consume the content over a very long time, or you can consume it in a serial way. But it's very multimedia rich, full of applets and so on, and it's all around the theme of around broadcasting, mass media, and propaganda in general. And when I got into it originally, it was going to be a work about the electronic mass media, and two kind of things really hit me. One was that I needed to kind of explain the fundamentals of the North Korean myth, so introduce the various actors, the locations that appear frequently in propaganda, which meant a kind of a bit of a North Korea 101, which is the first part of the book. And then the other part was, after traveling there so many times to collect the content, the whole environment, it's just propaganda. Everything that happens in that country is propaganda. What you see on the street, what you see in a park, the propaganda never stops. So then the scope of the project expanded beyond electronic mass media into magazines, books, the news, printed news media, but also things like monuments, statues, signs, like every aspect of life.
Right. Yeah. I was just about to say, I mean, in North Korea, the thing that I noticed right away is that everything is in dedication to the Kim family. Everything.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no, so unlike in our societies, we have an expectation that there'll be pop songs about boy meets girl, girl meets boy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's art forms and entertainment which is for no reason other than the creativity and for the art form itself. That what I found in North Korea, that's not the case. No matter what happens, every activity is somehow working towards the objectives of following Kim Il Sung and his family.
There's an interesting There's an interesting documentary that I caught a few years ago by Vice, where they visited the North Korean film industry, and they visited this one studio that everything in there, the whole studio, was built as a dedication to Kim. Everything. They weren't even producing any films.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's right.
The one thing I think that maybe a lot of people have a hard time understanding is that you said it earlier on. It's no longer a political ideology. It has become a religion.
Yeah, and so people just like many of our people listening to us today, their faith drives many people's lives. So, well, beliefs drive everyone's life, but quite often that people are religious and that their faith drives their life and what they believe is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. In North Korea, that faith is built around Kim Il-sung and Kim Il-sung's son, Kim Jong-il, mm-hmm. and his grandson, Kim Jong-un. And so so just like someone of faith would follow Christianity or Hinduism or whatever your faith is, or Islam, in North Korea, every decision and every both in government, in social acceptance, personal beliefs and just how society functions is all built around Kim Il-sung essentially being a god.
Well, that's why I think, I mean, especially when it comes to dealing with North Korea, cannot be dealt with in the same way as, let's say, the Soviet Union or even China. I mean, even though Mao was a cult figure with a personality cult involved, North Korea is at a different level. You know, and I kind of wonder sometimes, I mean, is North Korea going to, you know, is North Korea going to, let's say, advance and make changes like China? I doubt it, because that would mean everything that they have been saying for the past 30, 40, 50 years would have to be pushed aside. Will it fall, if North Korea falls apart, let's say like what happened in Eastern Europe with countries like Poland and Romania, I can see it being an absolute disaster.
Seeing like we saw in China with the death of Mao and eventually the discrediting of his wife and the Gang of Four and so on, this actually gave the Communist Party of China a vehicle to move in other directions to where now, you know, if you go to Beijing or Shanghai, if some people probably go there and don't even realize they're in a communist country. It doesn't mm-hmm. look like one to many people. North Korea is so different. They're at the moment, because we have a Kim dynasty and all legitimacy is built around that, it almost many ways the country, so the society and so on is trapped in this one direction. Definitely it's going to change. It's got to change sometime, but when? It's amazing.
Well, something...
Something
that I've noticed, especially, you know, over the last maybe 15 years that I've noticed, and I mean, quite recently we heard that, you know, certain people in the United States are saying that China has a lot of control over North Korea. Well, that's not exactly true. Now, there was a time when China did, and yes, it's true that North Korea is an ally of China and vice versa. But today, China sees more North Korea as a liability than anything else. And China is just trying, you know, keep the status quo because this is, you know, China's more like a pain in the neck for them now.
Yeah. So, for example, China, one of the largest legitimate ways to earn foreign exchange for North Koreans is selling coal to China. So mm-hmm. China have just recently announced that they're not taking any more coal for the rest of this calendar year. And this is a penalty for the continued nuclear testing that North Korea is doing mm-hmm. in alignment with international sanctions. So this is a real concrete example of where China seems to be losing patience with this country as well.
Well, one Chinese official told me when I was last in Beijing late last year that off the record, they would like to see major change in North Korea. They would like to see the country unified, but publicly they can't say it.
Yeah.
You know. Now, let's get back to the ebook for a moment. What is the easiest way to get the book? You said through iTunes.
Yeah, so if you go into iTunes and type, if you want to, the fastest way is to go into the iTunes bookstore. So if you have iBooks on any of your devices, you can go into that bookstore, but you can do it in regular iTunes as well. And if you type in Behind the Curtain, and that will produce a whole range of books, most of which are about the theatre or cinema. So a better
or home
way
decorating.
To do it is,
home indeed. Decorating with Kim.
So you can scroll through all of the results, or if you add it one extra word and put career, then you'll see it come up. And it's a sizable download. There's a limit. There's a file size limit in iTunes of 2 gigabytes, so I just almost hit that. So it will take a while to download, but I believe it's worth it. And in fact, there's been a large number of downloads, and everyone seems to think it's worth it. So I think you should give it a go and just accept that it might take 10 minutes or 15 minutes to download.
So let's say you started off with China, North Korea. What's next? I mean, there aren't many communist countries left in the world.
Yeah, so I've been working on this idea about Eritrea for quite a while, and I've done a fair bit of research, but haven't really kicked it off yet. Eritrea being the country which is either equal or sometimes on some indexes one rung lower at the bottom of media freedom in the world. Mm-hmm. But I've ended up being sidetracked on a couple of other things, but about capturing spectrum, radio spectrum, broadcasting spectrum, to archive it for future generations, which is keeping me interested at the moment. But the next North Korean, this book is only actually the overture to the project. So the whole project Behind the Curtain runs at least for another few years, but I don't think it's ever going to finish. It's a total of 5 books, and all 5 books are well on their way. Some of them are almost finished. And this one that you can currently get from iTunes is the overture. It's like the abridged Reader's Digest version of the whole project. The next one comes out in about, hopefully in about 6 to 8 weeks' time. And this is slightly different in that collecting and, well, doing all this research and going into the country meant that I took thousands, if not tens of thousands of photographs. And they're really amazing, but a really high percentage of them, maybe 80%, 90% of the photographs don't fit into the topic of broadcast media and so on. So there's all of these amazing photographs. So the next part to this project actually is presenting these photographs, which aren't really relevant to the topic we're discussing, but still I think deserve to be out there. So you can you'll be able to find that sitting next to the book we're talking about in a few weeks' time as well.
Do you know if North Korean officials are keeping an eye on you now?
I suspect they are. My website, which is behindthecurtain.asia, has had, just when I look at visitors and so on, I can see that there's been quite a few hits from within North Korea. So that means, of course, because there's no access to the general public in North Korea to the internet, that means that someone, at least if it has to be some particular purpose for someone to look at it. So I'm sure I'm very low on their list of people of interest, but they'll be aware of it. So I'm never planning to return. I actually suspect that in my lifetime I will return, but of course I can't return till there's a significant change in the way the country is run. But a couple of years ago, people quite often ask me, what do I think will happen? And maybe even about 2 years ago, I was saying, I wouldn't be surprised if in my lifetime it still continues. But I think now with what's happening, new United States president, just the advances that North Korea is making in their weapon systems and so on, and the amount of information that is now reaching the elite and educated classes, outside information in North Korea, I just think that something is going to happen sooner rather than later. So within the next few years, I'm expecting something's going to happen.
You know, I was going to say, just a moment ago. I mean, you did China, you did North Korea. One country I would suggest, because things are starting to change very fast, and that's Cuba.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, Cuba
I've never been to Cuba, and it's high on my list of where I want to go.
Cuba has a very interesting broadcasting structure. Even though I worked there in the 1990s, I have been back, and I'm still surprised when meeting engineering and technical friends of mine who work for both the domestic and the external service, Radio Havana Cuba, at how much of that old Soviet equipment from the 1970s is still in operation.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a place that I will be visiting in the next few years. In fact, in many ways, I think I've probably left it too long, so you've got to get there fast, yeah.
Mm. Mark, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks,
because you know, who knows, maybe this interview will make the rounds like the first one we did on Fire Drake.
For sure. Hopefully.
And that was my conversation with Mark Fahey, who's written a very interesting ebook on propaganda in North Korea. For more information, you can send us an email, focus@pcjmedia.com, and we will send you the link of how to actually get a copy of that fascinating book. And it is a very large file to download because it includes video and audio. Anyway, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the program. Some of you may have already noticed that the website for PCJ Media is actually down. Well, it's not totally down, because we're going through a facelift at the moment, and the new website will be relaunched in May. Now, you can listen to this program again, as well as past editions and other PCJ shows, by going to pcjmedia.com, the usual URL. And then on the front page, you'll see all the information you need to know to listen to the programs, including the PCJ radio link, or logo, that is. You click on the logo, and it will bring you to the program bank for this program, as well as all others. So, on behalf of the whole team, of everyone here at Focus Asia Pacific, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again very soon. Until next time, so long, and take care.